nicest car.
It's the most honest car you ever see.
It's been a dream ever since I've had it.
The first time I heard that engine screaming, I thought, I gotta have one of those.
For me, the cars have personality.
What's great about a BMW Classic is the community that surrounds it.
When you listen to that, that's why we're here.
Welcome to Classic Heart, the BMW Group Classic Podcast. My name is JP, and I'm extremely pleased to have another BMW crazy person in our little podcast. Now, life from the States, not really life, but life for me at this very moment, is Anna Broyles, better known as Beamer B. How are you doing today?
Great. Thank you so much for having me. I really am excited to be on here.
It's an absolute pleasure, Anna. We just have to give a little background information about you. So you are working for BMW for already 13 years. You are a master certified technician, as well as a high voltage specialist, which is very handy at these days of electrification of the automobile. That means in your work life, you deal with latest technologies and batteries in e-mobility. But we will talk about that a bit later. I would like to jump back to the beginning. You grew up in Colorado. Were you born into a car crazy family?
Actually, I was not. My dad was a carpenter. He made custom cabinetry, and my mom is an artist. So they were not car people by any means. And growing up, there was not a lot of car culture in my town. My town is very small. It was outside of Aspen to the west and in the mountains. So we did not have a lot of car culture. It was more, you know, sports, skiing, biking, those types of things. And so I wasn't really exposed to it as much as, you know, someone from like a different area would be.
But your father owned a BMW 2002 TII in Chamonix White. What a combination. That's yours now, right? How did that happen?
Well, when I was growing up, probably around when I was in elementary school, my dad purchased a 1972-2002 TII. And I don't really know too many details about it prior to the purchase, why he decided to get it. I know that they had owned a 2002 before that, but they had gotten rid of it before I was born. And so I guess he wanted another one, or he came across one that he found of interest. So he purchased that. And I do remember him driving it for a while when I was in elementary school. My fondest memory of it would be driving to and from school in it. And then I think I also got my love of going on extended drives, just driving around listening to music because of that car, because my dad would take me on drives all the time in it. And the smell of it is a great memory. It still has the same smell. I'm sure you're aware that, you know, each series of BMWs has their own kind of unique smell to them. And this has the 2002 kind of musty old smell, but is also kind of familiar and enjoyable in a way.
Absolutely. I mean, you work on BMWs a lot. So describe the different honors or honors you have if you smell into a modern one and older. What's the main difference? What would you say?
Newer ones, they're kind of more of a sterile smell in a way, but then you have like the 90s era, and that's like a crayon smell, if you could think about that in that way. And then, you know, the older you get, the more things that are degrading. So you get more of the musty smell going back further in time.
Yeah. We all know that they have sound designers, right? So they have people who are taking care of how the door closes, how the sound of the electric power, so about the power windows is, all these kind of things. I'm sure they have also someone for the smell. I'm 100% sure. But I think that's a question for another session. Maybe we get someone of the perfume designers of BMW from the design center one day. But let's go back
to the smell specialist.
Yes, what's your job? I'm a smell specialist. Okay, lovely. So so you have a fond memory about that car, and the car still is in your possession. So why was your father, or why has your father chosen a BMW?
I'm actually not sure, because we didn't have, in my memory, any other BMWs when I was growing up. We had kind of a he did carpentry, like I said. So he had a work truck. We had a Toyota, and then we had a Jetta, kind of like a random mix of cars. And then there was just this one outlier that got all of the attention and was really just a special car to him. And he spent a lot of time working on it. And he wasn't someone that was really into like restorations of cars. He really just fixed them, you know, in order for them to work properly, you know, if something broke. He was like a do-it-yourself kind of person as much as he could be. Mm-hmm. But this car, he just embarked on this quest to restore it for some reason or another.
I mean, you know, I think as a carpenter, you have like definitely already the handy skills, that's for sure, to create something great and to work mechanically, like work with your hands. And maybe it's just a way of to relax also a little bit, because that's what I hear from a lot of people. I mean, I'm the opposite. It would really stress me out having a restoration project sitting in my garage because I cannot fix it. But I think maybe that's something also, instead of watching the next football game or other activities, I go into the garage, fix a little bit of this and that, and let's see something come together very nicely. Did you some research on the car? So do you know where he found it? What was the history of that car?
I didn't do a lot of research. He did save a lot of the, you know, previous owners, I guess, paperwork. I know that possibly the original owner, well, what's interesting is there's photos from 1982, so 10 years after this car was manufactured, up in Chicago. It was at a body shop and was completely rusted apart. And the body shop, there are pictures of it just completely hacked apart. They're, you know, redoing the fender and like the trunk and the side panels, like everything. And I'm still to this day finding new things, surprisingly, or maybe not so surprisingly, considering the work that was done. But my dad had tried to do some paint work himself, mm-hmm. which he was capable of. But when I got the car after he passed away, we brought it back and we were going to, originally he had painted the body, so we just needed to do the doors, the trunk, and the hood. And I figured that's no big deal. But then it ended up that we couldn't match the paint because he had painted it himself, so the color wasn't correct. Mm-hmm. And then we found a bunch of other issues. So in the end, I decided it would be the best course of action to completely redo it, so everything is, you know, uniform. I didn't paint the engine bay, though, just because I didn't want to pull it out. The car mm-hmm. ran. I didn't want to take the drivetrain out. But it's definitely been through some experiences in terms of the body of it. And I'm glad that I have those pictures so I could see, because when I took it to the body shop to get it painted, they had tried to pull one of the corners out because it was a little misaligned, and they said it broke apart because it was stuffed with fiberglass. And then the other day, recently, I was going to put my suspension on and I went to jack it up from the frame.
Yeah.
And I heard a cracking noise. And I said, oh no, you know, what is that? And I found that they had put Bondo on the frame rail. So when I jacked it up, just that one time, it just happened to give way. And so I scraped it off to see what was underneath it. And there are some holes in the frame rail so that I'm not too excited to have discovered. But as with old cars, we know right. it's never ending and there's Absolutely. Always going to be something to work on.
I mean, that's also the beauty on it, right? But I'm still curious how you got into all these mechanic things, because with these especially with the background in the family. Do you think that the car helped a little bit for you to get curious about all this mechanical stuff?
I wouldn't say it was that car necessarily. I think I started my adventure into mechanics in high school. My first car was actually a Honda Prelude that I bought for $400. And I think I just wanted to learn how to change the oil, to know more about it. So I signed up for a shop class just to gain some general knowledge. And then once I started doing that, I realized that it was really fun. I'm a hands-on type of person. I think I take some from my dad and my mom in terms of, you know, those types of traits. Yeah. And to be able to problem solve, which is fun and satisfying. And so I carried on with that. The decision to actually go into working for BMW was definitely brought on by that car, because when I decided I wanted to be a mechanic and I wanted to come up with like a course to go on, looking at that car, I remember I went in the garage and I was like, you know what? I do want to work for BMW. I think that would be really cool. And you know, that was my decision. So I made it based on that car, but originally got into mechanical things, just trying to learn more about how to fix problems and understand how my car worked.
So in this case, thank you, Honda, for making you getting interested in that field. And sorry, Honda, that you lost Anna because she went for another brand. Sorry. But that's okay. I think that's fine. You are a young person. Do you go to clubs on your weekends? Do you go partying? And do you use the car for this? And how are the reactions if you do so?
Well, I don't feel like I'm that young anymore. But I think my hobbies kind of migrated from going to clubs and things like that towards more outdoor and just adventure activities. Mm-hmm. So I prefer to be working on something, riding my bike, going outside. But, you know, I do know that other people appreciate my car. I like to take it to events, especially like cars and coffee type of things. Mm-hmm. And everyone just like loves it. And there are so many people even driving it around. People will tell me to roll down the window so they can tell me that they used to own one, or someone in their family owned one, or, you know, there's some history of another 2002 in their family. And they're like, oh, it's so exciting to see one, because you really don't see a lot of them driving around. I mean, you see a lot of other classic cars usually, but I haven't seen a lot of 2002s, to be honest, just out and about.
Yeah, but you know, because it's getting more and more complicated owning vintage cars, right? That's also like a fact. And I mean, you have the big advantage that you know how to fix most of the things you can do. And otherwise, I think it's always also a bit of a price point, right? You can get them quite cheap, especially if you're now looking at cars from the beginning 80s and the 90s. So those are mass produced, but God forbid something happens to them. If you don't have the mechanical knowledge, it's going to be a money grave. But besides that, what makes vintage cars, or in particular, your BMW, so special to you?
I think it would be the design of it. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy looking at different designs, whether it be architecture or cars or, you know, any kind of design. But I'm more drawn to mid-century type of things, just because they were getting into newer types of designs. And I just really enjoy the design of the car because it's very simple, but is still, you know, sporty. And especially since it's a TII and it has the round tail lamps, like I just really enjoy all of those aspects of that specific model.
Tell us more about your lifestyle. What are things you are interested in, or what do you like to do? Your top five, maybe.
Oh, I don't know if there are any specific order, but cycling, cooking, design, obviously cars, and music, definitely music.
Yeah. What kind of music is your favorite? Or do you also have a very generous approach?
I would say it depends on mood. I grew up playing classical piano. I played for until I was 18. And then when I moved away, it was very difficult to practice. It takes a lot of discipline. And then, you know, becoming a mechanic, the dexterity and the time to invest in that kind of goes away when you find other things to do.
Yeah.
So I just recently got a piano again because I wanted to start playing. And what's interesting is my dad, while also working on this car, got back into music, and he started playing music also. And then he joined a band. And so he was kind of into a lot of different things as well. And I think I take that away from him also.
Yeah, I mean, that's fantastic. And, you know, starting the piano, I tried it many times to get back to that. But I still have to say, having the discipline, Mom, if you listen, it's a horrible truth. so what would you say, is there a song that would describe your BMW best? Would you be more heavy metal? Would you be more classical or hip hop?
I would say probably jazz.
Like, why is that?
60s jazz. It just reminds me of my dad and, you know, that car, I think it's very fitting, like a classical kind of jazz guitar type of song is what I'm thinking. Because I listened to a lot of that also growing up, and the year of that car, just the vision of it, I would say that probably jazz would go with it.
That's proper. That's good. So, you know, speaking about your daily work now, which is your daily routine now, which is like working on modern cars. So they're very digital and your car is very analog, right? Do you miss a bit of the digital world in your BMW, or do you like this analog thing? So no sat nav, no Bluetooth. Is it very pure, or do you wish you had some stuff like from modern cars also adapted to that one to make it more practical in use?
I think if you start putting in modern things in cars like that, it takes away some of the experience because, you know, you're seeking out a vintage car for specific reasons. Like, you know, you want that pure driving experience and where you're just focused on the car and the performance of it or in the feel of it. And I think once you start adding distractions in, whether they're creature comforts or not, I think it can take away from the experience. Like, would I like to listen to music in the car? Sure. But also it's so loud in there that you can't really listen to music even if I wanted to anyways. So, yes. And you know, I don't really use a lot of the features in new cars. I'm more of a simplistic minimalist and I prefer less things. And each new model release with more and more buttons in it, I kind of like back away from. It's not really my preference.
I agree, because I think I feel overwhelmed by all these flashy things and displays that look at me. And then I also feel like super distracted. But working on these cars, on electric cars, does this have the same appeal to you, mechanically speaking? Or is it less challenging, or because you don't have more hands-on approach on that? What would you say?
I would say it's a little bit less interesting because the diagnosis of those components is different than, you know, any type of mechanical diagnosis. We're mostly relying on a test plan or BMW to tell us what is going on because we don't have all the information, nor could we properly interpret it because, you know, we're not an engineer and it's very complicated. We have understanding of electricity and all of those things, but in terms of what BMW can see within an issue on a car versus what we see, it's a lot different and we don't have access to all that. And, you know, they've done a really good job developing test plans to help us troubleshoot and, you know, special tools and all of these things that go along with the new technology. But in terms of interest, you know, you can't really do a lot. You're not opening it up. You're not doing live tests. Like, I'm a high voltage battery specialist. So if we don't get a, you know, high voltage system deactivated notification, if we try to deactivate it, then I would have to do a live test on it. And even from there, I do my live test and then I send that information to BMW and then they would advise us what to do. We're not making decisions on those things.
That sounds absolutely crazy, but I really like that you went down that route as well. And then going back to your old car and fixing something, I mean, that's then you span a whole bridge over a very troubled river, I would say, nowadays. So what was the last thing you need to fix on your BMW 2002?
Oh, actually, my major project was my dad had made a custom console out of wood, which I planned to put in the car. I covered it myself. It looked pretty good. But when I put it in, I kind of had this realization that it didn't fit how I wanted. And I'm sure, you know, if he was still alive, it would have been more of a prototype and he would have made a better version. But I decided to actually get another one that was pre-made. And then I wanted to put an original radio back in because my dad was the type of person that always had to put like some sort of aftermarket radio in a car. I don't know what the attraction was to that. But so he did that and I wanted an original radio to go in the new console. And it took me a long time to find one. And I finally had to talk to someone in the Netherlands who does restorations of these vintage radios. And there's like a perfect Blaupunk radio and it's awesome. And I was really excited about it. So I got that and I've put that in, but it's not hooked up. It's kind of there like a vanity radio right now until I get the rest of the pieces. It's like a big puzzle. You're always Lovely. Collecting pieces and figuring out where they go, but it's fun sometimes.
Have you ever translated Blaupunk into English?
No, I have not.
It's quite simple. I mean, blue point. This is why they have the blue dot in the logo as well.
Oh.
So Punkt is point and Blau,
I guess Blau is blue.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know why I came up with that because I grew up in the Citroëns and they have also these clarion radios. And then mm-hmm. my father was not happy with the sound of it because he was also very much into jazz and music and quality of sound system in the car was very important to him. And so he changed it to a Blaupunkt. And I was always fascinated because it must be in the early 90s. So you switch it on and then an orange dot goes towards the sign Blaupunkt and it makes it an explosion on the Blaupunkt, but it was not blue, obviously, but that's my Blaupunkt, my personal Blaupunkt memory. A friend of mine is a crazy chap and he is a crazy mechanic guy as well, electronics. And what he does is, so he takes old radios and he somehow retrofitted inside a Bluetooth responder.
Oh yeah, that's what I got. Yeah.
Mega. I mean, that's the perfect thing to do because it looks completely original and mm-hmm. it has the functionality that makes it more usable. Anna, earlier you said you like to go to cars and coffee events. Have you ever thought of doing your own cars and coffee?
I think there are already a lot of cars and coffees here. I would actually like to create an event that encompasses bikes, kind of skateboarding and cars all together. Just a kind of like open house kind of thing where people bring their cars and you have like a little event with, you know, maybe BMX bikes or skateboarding or something like that, because there's a lot of overlap between the car community and cycling and those types of things. And I think it would be fun to incorporate all of those into, you know, like a 1 day or 2 day event at some point.
So we have to mention that biking is a very like important part of your life as well. So it's not only four wheels, it's also two wheels, but man-powered muscle power, that's the correct word I would like to look. So you are also into muscle power two wheels. So tell us more about that. Is it racing bikes, is it downhill bikes, or what are you doing?
Well, I'll start at the beginning where I got into this, because like many things in my life, I kind of fall into things.
Yeah.
I used to race cars. Originally, after my dad passed away, I started racing an E30 that I had built. And that was fun. It was kind of more of a something to focus on while I was going through all of that. And that turned into me getting my competition license. And then I ended up selling that car and I was racing spec Miatas for a little bit where I was. And then unfortunately, the same week that I agreed to go ahead with all the body work on the 2002, and I said I wasn't going to do a lot of racing this year. And everyone's like, oh, just do one race. It'll be fine. Like you can have the rest of the year to work on the car. So I do the one race and probably three or four laps into this race, the first race of the season, someone puts me in a wall and it totals the car I'm driving. That was interesting. Luckily, all my safety equipment worked.
Good.
But unfortunately, the car was totaled and kind of became an expensive week for me. Yeah. And,
sounds you like. Know,
I love racing cars. I think it's really fun. I'm a competitive person, but it's a lot to commit to financially and logistically and, you know, just time-wise as well. So I ended up going to a cyclocross race. I don't know if you guys know what cyclocross is. It's kind of like a cross between a gravel and a road bike. and you're on a course and it's kind of like a sprint race. You do a couple laps, but mm-hmm. it's, you know, an all out athletic event. And coming from, it was never very athletic. I was never interested in it. I didn't do sports in school, but, you know, I went to this cyclocross race and it looked really fun. So I'm someone that kind of just decides I'm going to do something and I just go do it with no knowledge of it. And so I ended up buying a bike and racing it for a couple seasons. Yeah. It was really fun. And then the team that I ended up on was like, hey, have you ever ridden a mountain bike? You should probably try it. So I got a mountain bike. And the first legitimate like race I did on the mountain bike was a 12-hour race.
What?
So, yeah.
How does this work?
It's just laps. And you could either do it as kind of a team, but I chose to do it solo. So I was on my bike for about 12 hours. And then another
crazy.
I ended up getting more and more bikes because I got, you know, my hands into more and more different events and styles of riding. I did a 150-mile race on my cyclocross bike that I had converted to a single speed. So that was about a 10.5-hour ride. But, you know, it's fun because it's challenging. And, you know, doing something like that, you know, mentally and physically, it's good to overcome those things while you're riding. And it's, I just think it's good for you to challenge yourself in those ways. So then that led to me riding and meeting so many more people, just like with the car community within different activities. You know, you meet all these new people and then you kind of learn new things and you go different directions. And I ended up getting into enduro and downhill riding. So I bought an enduro bike and I go to downhill parks and I race enduro races. And I would say I was probably safer in my car crash than I was on some of my rides, because I've definitely had some incidents. But, you know, it's fun and I love the community. And I love that there's also crossover, like I said, between cars and, you know, lots of different other physical sports.
I really like how occasionally you're just telling us the most amazing stories. Anyone would like be celebrating themselves. And you're just like, yeah, you know, I did this. And then in 12 hours, I started with that. And then I have this one. Oh, by the way, before that, I totaled my car someone pushed me into a wall. So I really like the relaxed atmosphere. You're all telling us these stories. So I think that's very unique. I have to say, I love it. But my question is, you mentioned just overcome also like limits, right? I think that's also why what else is the reason to ride a bike for 12 hours to just test your borders and to get over it or to surpass it? Take us to this 12-hour ride. So when is the point where you think I cannot do it anymore? When was it when you did this 12-hour ride?
I think it happens more at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, why am I signed up for this? You know, why am I doing this? But I think it's more fun when, in my opinion, when you show up. I mean, there are exceptions. Like, you can't just show up and do certain things. But to show up to an event or something that you've never done before with no knowledge, I think having too much knowledge about something prior to doing it can be limiting in a way, because you're thinking of too many things. And when you have like an open mind to something, just like I would say deciding to become a mechanic, you know, there's not a lot of women, as you know, and I never really even considered that. I was just like, you know, I'm just going to show up and kind of see what happens. So, you know, going to a race like that, you hear other people have done it. It's a really fun time, all of these things. And I think, you know, a couple hours in, I flipped over some rocks and I had a giant contusion on my knee. You know, you get to a point where you're like, is this worth it? Like, it's just a race. But, you know, you kind of want to see where you can take yourself and like how far you can push yourself with something like that mentally. And I think that people have more roadblocks mentally than you do physically, usually, because being in your head about something is much more limiting than we think about.
But I would like to say that this mechanism why your brain and your mind is limiting you is also a reason for protection of hurting yourself or the organism, I think. Nevertheless, of course, I think you see it with apnea diving. I mean, that you can hold your breath for 11 or more minutes. I mean, that's like you have to be strong in mind to really surpass this will of taking a breath.
You know, I feel like I used to ruin a lot of experiences for myself by expecting too much from myself. Yeah. And when you show up more with an open mind and you're not trying to like say set these parameters of like I have to do this and I have to win this and it's going to be this way, that's where I think it gets limiting. But you know, if you're there to have a good time and you're relaxed, then you're way more likely to enjoy the experience and do better overall.
Yeah. I remember earlier I had a teacher in school, and she was drawing us like a circle, and in that circle she marked comfort zone, and then a little bit above the circle, outside of the circle, another small circle where the magic happens.
Yeah.
And you should always strive to get out of that to find the way where the magic happens. And to the point of an open mind, I really do see this the same way. But I mean, a day has 24 hours and the week has 7 days. How does a really nice day off looks like for Anna?
Well, I would say it depends on the season. In the summertime, I am racing usually almost every weekend, driving all over the place. I would say I'm not someone that knows how to traditionally relax. Like, I feel like sitting and being idle, like, I don't know how to enjoy that. Mm-hmm. Last year, I went on a vacation, I say this jokingly. It was a vacation, but it was a 10-day solo road trip for 2,000 miles all up New England. So, and I went to a bunch of downhill parks. That was really fun. Visited a lot of waterfalls, jumped off like the highest waterfall that I've ever jumped off of. And that I would say that's another thing where you're on the limit of like danger and fear and overcoming that, because I definitely stood on that ledge for quite some time before I decided to go ahead with that. And I think knowing the dangers and then still making a decision based on the available information is the most important part of doing anything. If to go back to what we're talking about, as long as you're aware of it and you're not discounting or disregarding actual danger, then I think it's okay to proceed with those things.
Agreed. Absolutely. Anna, we have a little thing that's called, like, we called it, I don't know how it started, but we call it the service part of our podcast. And as you are from Colorado, you don't live there anymore, but you, as you said, you go back on a regular basis. So you know the area quite well. And I think it's fair to say that parts of Colorado are considered the most beautiful place in the United States. What would be the best road trip from point A to point B if you come to Colorado by car?
There are so many. you could go from Aspen all up through Carbondale, through Redstone, Marble. And Marble's like a small town. It's a lot of the towns in my area are named after things like, yes, Carbondale, Gypsum. There's a lot of mining community. It was mining towns originally, Silverton. And Marble has a marble quarry.
Absolutely.
It's very creative with their name. But so you could go to Marble, and then if you go over McClure Pass, you can go down into Paonia, and I went there with my mom actually last year. It's called Gunnison. It's called Black Rock Canyon. Really, you know, you're driving over the pass, which is fun and interesting. There's mountains, and then you kind of get out into the open. It's more arid, and then you get to this basically giant crack in the earth, which is a huge canyon. And it's just a really great view experience. You can drive around it. I had never actually been there until last year, which is surprising, because mm-hmm. my dad used to take us all over the place. We used to go to the desert all the time, but I really enjoyed that that drive, because it's not very difficult. You're not going over anything crazy. And there are a lot of scenic areas to stop at, you know, from Aspen all through that whole drive.
So everyone tuning in, note that down, because this sounds like the next route for the big USA road trip. I think it sounds fantastic. Would you suggest to do this in spring or summer?
I would say probably summertime would be better, depending on the temperatures that you like.
Absolutely. And if you who joined us for our little chat here, so if you want to learn more about or follow Anna's life, I just can recommend to follow her Instagram, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's Beamer_B. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes. Bimmer. B-I-M-M-E-R.
So follow Anna and you see a most amazing concerts because the musical career is also going on. You're going to see a lot of a Chamonix white BMW 2002 and you see Anna in a workshop. So you can really follow your life a little bit and that's very exciting. So Anna, thank you very much. And for those who tuned in today, thank you very much for joining us. Try to hit the subscribe button to not miss any of our upcoming episodes or look at the ones we already put live on the stream service you trust. And if you would like to do us a great favor, leave some comments and some stars for us. And that's it for today. Classic Heart, JP and Anna, we say bye-bye.
Thank you.
Goodbye. Thank you very much.
Bye.